Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, happy Friday, St. Louis, the day after Thanksgiving, and look who it is right there. It's Mr. Turk Tom the Turkey himself, John Hancock.
Hey there. Happy day after Thanksgiving. This will be our 15th year on KMOX, the day after
right?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. 15 years. Do you remember when we started? We were doing, like, traffic at the at the malls.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a mall
anymore.
We'd
have reporters out there at Chesterfield Mall.
Yeah. And, well, Roger would be up in his little helicopter.
In the helicopter.
And he'd be looking to say, look, you don't want to go over to the Galleria. Go over to, you know, Jamestown Mall.
Jamestown Mall. Yeah. No, not a whole lot of Black Friday-ing going on out there. I guess there's some. We had a report I heard on the news earlier that the Bass Pro Shop, there were some people out there early this morning. They were.
Did you ever do that? Did you ever wake up early and go
I
get in line
did.
Anywhere?
No, yeah, no. Georgianne did.
Did she?
Georgianne and my daughter did 1 year, I remember. And they got up at 4:30 or whatever it was, and they hit the mall. But that's the only one I remember, and I was not there.
Yeah.
So.
You ever been in a Costco?
Never have.
Okay, so I saw on the web the other day a Costco, and what they did is they must have had a table that was about 20 feet long,
yeah.
And they stacked pumpkin pies on it.
Ugh.
About 4 or 5 feet tall.
Pumpkin pie.
And they did a time delay camera of people taking these pumpkin pies.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable how many people are going and, you know, getting pumpkin pies. You're not a pumpkin pie guy.
It's the most overrated pie in the history of pies.
What are you talking about?
Well, you got it's pumpkin.
What don't you like about pumpkin pie?
The taste. So
you don't like anything pumpkin?
No.
Have you ever had the pumpkin spice coffees?
They force it on you out there, and you everywhere you go, you can't avoid it. It's pumpkin this and pumpkin that, and it's a conspiracy by the pumpkin growers, who have foisted this horrible thing on all of us.
Really?
It starts with Halloween, and then boom, it's just
I don't mind pumpkin
fall.
Pie. I think it's good.
Yeah, I don't
like you know, it. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, how much of the pumpkin is actually in a pumpkin pie?
Well, enough. Enough to ruin it.
By the way, what part of the pumpkin do they turn into a pumpkin pie? Is
the
actual
pulp. The pulp?
The stuff in the inside?
Yeah, buddy.
There's not much stuff on the inside.
Well, that's why. That's exactly right.
There's no way. They would have to almost cook the whole orange thing and turn that into pumpkin.
No, buddy. They don't. Nobody eats.
Have you
the
ever carved
peel?
A pumpkin for Halloween?
I have.
Okay. So when you cut the top off
yeah.
and you put your hand in there,
yeah.
okay, say you got a pumpkin the size of a basketball.
Yeah, you got goo
you're
and
lucky
seeds.
To get two handfuls of nonsense.
Exactly.
And they're going to make a whole pumpkin pie out of that?
They do.
No, I don't think you're
well,
right.
Well, it's more than one pumpkin. I mean, there's millions and billions of pumpkins out there.
Yeah.
And that really have no reason to exist if you want
you
to.
You ever go pumpkin shopping?
Yes.
Like where you went and cut it off a vine?
Yes.
Oh, I have never done that.
We just did it this last year with the granddaughter.
Oh, and so the pumpkin was on a vine and you went there and cut it off the vine?
We did.
How was it?
It was fine.
Did the granddaughter like it?
She did.
Yeah.
We had a little wagon. And
what if she gets into pumpkin pies? Will you be okay with pumpkin pies?
I would eat a pumpkin pie if she made it.
Yeah.
And I would act like
does anybody really know? 436-7900. Does anybody, can they explain to us what part of the pumpkin goes into a pumpkin pie? I think you're wrong. I think it's kind of like a squash. When they cut open a squash, they put it in the oven.
No.
And the part of the squash that you eat is the part that's up against the skin. It's not the inside with the seeds and all that part. It's the, I don't know what you'd call it, you
it's
know,
the pumpkin. It's the stuff that's around on the edge of the on the inside edge. You pop, scoop that out. You don't eat the goo and the seeds in a pumpkin pie.
No, because what they do, I think what they do with the pumpkin pie is they cut it open and then it's the actual part that butts up to the skin of the orange that becomes the pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
I'm sure one of
that's
our listeners
right.
knows
but, no,
this.
That
it's
is
not the stuff on the middle. It's not the gunk.
No, it's not the goo. No, that's
well. You're changing your story now.
I'm not changing my story. That's been my story from the moment.
You're like Donald Trump over there. I can't get you to pin down on anything.
No, the goo and the seeds you don't make a pie out of.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
No, it has to be the thickness of that.
Yes, that's what I've been saying.
But how do you do that? Like, say you and I went and bought a pumpkin. Can we do that on our own? Could we go and make a pumpkin pie out of a pumpkin? Or
well, you gotta. So you've gotta extract the stuff there, and then you got to throw it into a, you know, blender or whatever. Do we have a caller, James? Gino. Gino.
Hey, Gino. Italian pumpkin pie.
Nobody knows more about pumpkins than Gino. Gino, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, John. Hi, Mike.
Hey, now. Mike,
one thing you're right about, it is the meat that is ground up and made into the pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
That's what
I said. Not the stuff the seeds are all ground up in. No. Not the seaweed stuff.
The goo. That's
so, Gino, you ever done this? Like, what do you do? You cut over a pumpkin, then you put it in an oven, and you bake it, and then take the stuff out and goo it up? Or how do they do it?
No. They grind. They take the meat out of there. The meat. They cure it, and then they stick it in the oven.
Yeah.
Boy. And they add the spices, the cinnamon, and all the other stuff.
Now, why do they call it the meat when there's no meat in the pumpkin?
Well, what do you think that is up next to the skin?
Yeah.
There's meat on your. John, there's meat on your bones. When you take your skin away, you got meat, don't you?
Oh yeah, I got lots of meat. Well, more fat than meat, but the meat on the pumpkin is not meat.
No.
You gotta,
but I think it's a description of the part of the pumpkin. So, Gino.
Yeah, from your vegetarian standpoint, John, you can call it what you want.
Gino, did you have pumpkin pie yesterday?
No, I had pecan pie.
Pecan.
Oh.
Now, there's a great pie, but it's a misleading pie because the pecans are on the top, but the gelatinous goodness, I don't think it has anything to do with pecans. I think it's just sugar and stuff in there.
I don't know what that is. Do you?
No.
Nougat. It's like the Milky Way. You got the Milky Way bar, that whatever that the strain of nougat stuff is what's in pecan pie.
Well, John, you're married to a Greek gal. Isn't it the same stuff they put in a body college?
Oh, it is in the baklava. Yes, very similar.
So that's just sugar and stuff.
And goodness. Gino, have yourself. Are you out there shopping?
No, I'm headed to the office. Some of us have to work for a living.
Exactly right. Welcome to the crowd, Larry Gino.
Well, you'll have plenty of room for yourself today at the office. I'm sure.
Glad you guys enjoyed your hats.
Yeah. Oh, you're the hat guy.
Oh, Gino, the hat guy.
Love my hat.
Thank you so much, Gino.
It's sitting in my hat collection right now.
Gino, please tell me you're an Italian.
Full-blooded Sicilian.
Yeah. Oh, Sicilian. And he knows a little bit about pumpkin pie. I don't think they make any pumpkins over in Italy.
They got pumpkins over there.
No, but we know how to cook.
Yeah, they do know how to cook. Gino, truer words were never spoken here on The Voice of St. Louis. Thanks so much. Have yourself a good day.
So, have a great one, guys.
Gino the hat guy.
So, Gino the hat guy. Hey, boy, we've got a lot to catch up on today. You know, for those of you who are regular listeners, we do our political segment nets. So we'll step aside. We're going to come back.
Well, we're not going to step aside yet because I haven't talked about what I came here to talk about this morning.
Oh, John needs to get some brownie points from his wife. So if you can all indulge for a minute, he's going to tell us on how he was actually a contributor yesterday.
So we had 10 people, roughly, over at the house yesterday.
10 people.
You had the big turkey in the pan there, and the mashed potatoes, and you had the green beans. You had the macaroni and cheese. Phenomenal.
Did you bake any of that?
Of course, the stuffing. No.
Okay.
And then, I don't know, 5 different pies. The cranberries and the cranberry relish.
Pumpkin pie.
And, corn... casserole and the what else? The sweet potato with the
John,
marshmallows.
John, it sounds like your Thanksgiving was like every other human beings in America.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was over.
Uh-huh.
And everyone left.
They got up and just said, I'm out of here, threw their napkins on a table.
In my kitchen were pots and pans the likes of which you've never seen before, Michael.
For 10 people?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Piled up. And lots of leftovers that have to be dealt with.
Yes.
And then the dining room table and the kitchen table that was the extension of the dining room table, full of stuff.
Did you pull out the good china?
Glassware. Yes.
So that you can't throw that stuff in the dishwasher.
No.
You got to hand wash it.
Yes.
Oh, please tell me more.
For 4 hours, Michael.
Oh.
I cleaned.
I could have ran a marathon in that time.
I put away. I moved the kitchen table back to the kitchen where it belongs. All of the glassware, all of the dishes, all of the pots, all of the pans, even the nasty thing that we put the turkey in that had all the
glottinous
crap on
goo.
Cleaned it all.
Yeah.
Cleaned it all.
Done.
And the kitchen this morning,
tidied
when I got up at 5:15, I walked down.
Smelled
to the
like
kitchen,
dawn.
Hit the button on the coffee maker that I made the night before the coffee.
Right.
And
after your 4 hours of work.
4 hours. And the kitchen looked like the cleaning.
Are you special needs in that you needed 4 hours to do the dishes of 10 people? I think I could have handled that in about an hour.
You could not.
For 4 hours, John.
You could not have done.
I could have ran a marathon in four hours.
You could not have done what I did. And that's all I'm going to say, and that's all.
But it was only 10 people, dude.
10 large people. Nine large people.
If it took you 4 hours to clean, it must have taken 4 days to cook it all.
It was one of the most remarkable cleaning moments that I've ever witnessed.
Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Hancock and Kelly rolls on after this with our political segment right here on KMOX.
Work or play, KMOX is right there with you. We go where you go.
You were cleaning so long yesterday that had I gotten on an airplane in Los Angeles, I could have flown to New York City the time you could have gotten done washing the dishes.
Yeah.
For 10 people.
It was,
How were you getting the water from the stream down the street and having to bring it up in buckets?
The hot water when you're cleaning. It's got to be so hot, and then you got to put your hand in that stuff, you know, and very dangerous activity cleaning like that.
Wow.
And the scrubbing. And, you know, what I've noticed is that I'm such a good cleaner that when other people clean, especially these pans and pots, and they don't take the time to actually scrub.
I can
scrub
appreciate
all the
what you're saying
off.
Right now, because I'm one of those people that. In my house, I don't know how it is at your house, but I'm by myself.
Yeah.
But I don't like it when other people like do my laundry or do my dishes because I have a particular place and way that I want the dishes done.
Yes.
And in particular, laundry. Now, do you do your own laundry?
I did laundry last night.
The 4 hours?
I had the laundry going on.
Buddy, did you have a feather duster attached to you too? Running around the house dusting stuff?
It was impressive is all I can tell you.
There's no doubt about it.
Which is why I've got no grief at all about playing snooker this afternoon.
Yes. Well, before we get into the rest of politics, let's deal with Donald Trump. Yesterday was Thanksgiving, John. As you'll remember, a couple of years ago, he tweeted out, Happy Thanksgiving, even to all the losers and haters.
I do remember.
And, you know, that got a little bit of chuckle because Donald Trump's a bit of an entertainer. Boy, yesterday morning, he got up and just went off on a tirade.
It was like 2:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah, with, you know, the world's just doing him wrong and he's the only person who can fix things, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, he went off on the judge in New York on the fraud trial.
The one that he's gagged on.
Letitia James, the district attorney there, the attorney general of New York, and as well as the clerk of the judge, Judge Ingeron in New York. And, yeah, I mean, he's got a gag order specifically on those cases. It'll be interesting to see if what the judge does in response to that tweet.
Hasn't the former president jumped the shark when it comes to this nonsense? I mean, everything's
apparently
just
not
a grievance. Everything is everybody's out to get him. Only he can fix it. I get it. There's a contingency inside the Republican Party that I guess would follow him to the gates of hell. I have no idea, but I just feel like the guy's jumped the shark. It's so predictable. We know what he's going to do. Next, it's going to be these liberal Democrats and Joe Biden are waging a war on Christmas, and I can't put up my Christmas tree anymore. It's quite predictable, isn't it?
Well, I will say that there is a very appreciative audience out there who likes the Donald Trump style. They like Donald Trump's policies. They like Donald Trump's aggressiveness. And it's a sizable contingent of the electorate, not my cup of tea, but there is a sizable group out there. And they tend to be folks that really don't like the political establishment at all. And a guy like Donald Trump comes along and speaks to that. I mean, you're seeing kind of at the junior high level of Vivek Ramaswamy appealing to that same voter base. And, it may be sufficient to. I think it's certainly sufficient to win a Republican nomination. It may be sufficient to win the White House.
We shall see. Speaking of the White House, President Joe Biden facing challenges with young people. Democrats are in strong need almost in every election cycle of young people coming out in support of them. Recent polling shows there's a disenchantment with President Biden, specifically as it relates to the Israel-Palestine conflict. On top of cost, et cetera, this is on the heels of the president forgiving student debt loans, making sure that young people got their fair share finally in the COVID relief packages. I don't buy this nonsense, John, that that young people are going to abandon Joe Biden. What, are they suddenly going to jump on the Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump train? I don't see it. Could they potentially stay home?
Yes.
And not vote?
Yes.
Maybe. But the consequences of the opponent coming in any instance, any Republican coming in, not having anything in line with those younger voters, leads me to believe this is much to do about nothing. You feel differently.
Well, you just put your finger on it. I'm not. I mean, you see the numbers and the young people saying they're, you know, have an unfavorable view of Biden. You know, whatever. But you're right. They're not a bunch of 20-year-olds that are going to go rushing to vote for Donald Trump. There'll be some, but not many. But the bigger problem that Joe Biden is going to have, and say whatever you want about Donald Trump, his supporters are passionate. They're going to show up and they're going to vote. And what Biden lacks is any kind of passion amongst the electorate. And so turnout is going to be a real problem, I think, for Democrats if they stick with Joe Biden. I don't think they're going to. I actually think the Democrats are in the middle of executing a plan that was hatched some time ago to, you know, gently remove Joe Biden from the equation and replace him with Gavin Newsom. That's what I think is happening, but I could be wrong. I was wrong. And I think
the other thing that's important for people to remember is these polls that are coming out are reflective of the entire population of the United States. Well, the four or five biggest states in the country don't matter. New York, we know that it's voting Democrat. Texas, we know that it's going for the Republicans. California, for the Democrats, etc. This race is going to come down to four or five states: Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, potentially Georgia, maybe North Carolina. I mean, I just don't see a lot of the nuances that we're spending so much time on. Oh, African-Americans are leaving Joe Biden. Common sense, practical Republicans are leaving Donald Trump. I think at the end of the day, John, when we get down to a binary choice and we're having this battle in these five or six states, this is all just good fluff for us to talk on the radio, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, although if you look at the battleground states, now the poll's been out for, I don't know, 3 weeks now, but for Wisconsin, where Biden was up by a couple of points, in every other battleground state, Donald Trump was winning, and he was winning in a two-way. He was winning in a three- or four-way when you put Robert F. Kennedy and Stein, whatever her name is, Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, and you put some of that in the mix, and Trump was winning in every one of those battleground states. And so if you're going to focus, as you should, if you're really going to study the presidential election, if you're going to just focus on those half a dozen states, that even doesn't look good for Biden, and that's why I think your team would be well advised to make a change there.
Well, that would have to be a decision that the President of the United States would make. And I know there's pressure out there. There's obviously options as well. The governor of California, the governor of Illinois, potentially stepping in, a number of other folks that could do it. But it seems to me that if that plan were to be executed and there's some invisible hand that is out there that's playing a role in these elections, it seems to me that this is a slam dunk that it's going to be Gavin Newsom's party.
I think that's right. And I think the invisible hand is rather apparent for all to see. I think it's Barack Obama. And I think Obama is going to be the guy that's going to deliver the bad news to Joe Biden that, you know, you can't run. And we'll see if it works. You know, there's no discipline in the Republican Party to be able to do anything approaching that. And we'll see if the Democrats are able to execute. But no question in my mind that that's the plan.
Well, many of you spent all day yesterday watching football, spending time with your family, trying to avoid talking about politics, I'm sure. Well, guess what? There's some football that will be on later today. You can listen to it right here on KMOX, or you can watch it on Amazon.
This is fascinating, by the way. Michael brought my attention to this morning.
Unearthed some really interesting information as it relates to the broadcast of today's NFL game. You're going to want to stick around to hear about it after this on the news. After the news on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Well, it's as an American as pumpkin pie and turkey on Thanksgiving. What is that? That's football, John Hancock.
The National Football League.
In 2022, the NFL games averaged, the three games they had, averaged 33.5 million viewers.
That's a lot.
That is a ton of people. There were 42 million people in 2022 that watched the Cowboys and Giants. That's the most watched regular season game of all time. So football has become a part of Thanksgiving unlike anything before. But did you know that there's going to be a football game played today, the day after Thanksgiving,
Black Friday? For the first time ever, right?
And who's putting it on? Is it one of the big networks? No, it's the group that wants you to go shopping. Now, how has the world changed that Amazon wants you to watch football on
Black Friday?
So listen to this.
That's very interesting, actually.
Well, on a holiday that's known for people leaving the house to go shopping, Amazon's betting on people staying at home and watching football but still shopping. John, did you know there's a Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961 that prohibits NFL games on Fridays after 6 p.m. Eastern and all day Saturdays during the fall?
I did not know that. So an act of Congress?
It's an act of Congress. This rule was implemented by Congress to protect high school and college football from seeing a decline in attendance.
1961, that's before you were born, Kelly.
Yeah, because of the NFL. But Amazon has found a way with the NFL to skirt those rules. Mm. They are paying the NFL $100 million to offer today's game on Amazon, which will take place at 2 p.m. local time.
The Miami Dolphins against the New York Jets.
Amazon is allowing anyone to watch. Of course, Thursday night's first games, you have to be a member of Prime so that you can go on and watch. Uh-huh. But with today's game, you'll be able to go on and log on to Amazon, give them your information, and you will have an opportunity to watch the football game right there on Amazon
Prime.
Don't
even have to be a member.
For free.
Huh.
The average commercial on a Thursday night on Amazon is about $440,000.
For 30 seconds.
Black Friday Thursday ads, so today's game that starts at 2 o'clock local, $880,000.
For an ad. That's more than it costs to advertise on KMOX.
But listen to this. Yeah. Amazon's also going to leverage a new ad strategy called audience-based creative.
Say what?
This will enable brands to target different audience segments with different ads in the same time slot. For example, Bose, the speaker company, is going to have three different ads that they're going to use this new technology for. The first ad will feature Joe Burrow, who will be delivered to non-Prime members. So people who don't belong to Prime who sign up today,
they're going to
get Joe Burrow selling you a Bose speaker.
Yeah.
The other two ads will feature different products and will be shown only to Prime members based on their Amazon Prime search history.
Whoa.
And here's the best part.
So they're advertising, they're targeting you to advertise based on what you've looked for
on Amazon.
Individually.
Yes.
That's incredible.
These targeted ads will also be shoppable, meaning viewers can watch the commercial, place the product in their cart on Amazon, and click of a button, and check out without ever leaving the broadcast of a game.
Wait a minute. So you're sitting there, you're watching the football game.
Yeah.
And there it is. It's the amazing waffle maker.
Yep.
You can pour your little waffle juice in the thing and throw the little waffle maker in the whatever, and boom, out pops a waffle. And you say, I got to have one of those.
Yep. And so you'll be able to push a button right there.
I can buy the waffle maker.
Put it into your cart, watch it, and never leave the football game.
That's incredible.
That makes Amazon broadcasts far more valuable than the typical commercial brands that will be targeting.
Not going to let my wife watch the football game today.
Many believe this will be a brand advertising revolution, and you could see companies like Amazon and Apple continuing to grow this going forward with live sport. It only makes sense, right? I mean, most of us aren't watching television over the air anymore. Heck, we're not even watching it via cable. We're doing it via streaming. So you've already got that device in your hand. And, you know, how many times have you seen an advertisement on television and you thought, man, I'm interested in that?
That'd be fun.
Now, at the click of a button,
boom,
you'll be able to do it.
It can be yours.
That's pretty magical, huh?
Wow. Huh. So people are going to be watching the football game, and the ad's going to pop up. It's a car.
Yeah.
You can buy the car right there.
Boom. BMW. Boom. Send it to the house. Put the red ribbon on it.
Wow.
But what's crazy is that based on the fact that, for instance, I have Bose speakers in my house.
Do you?
And so I occasionally go to look at Bose.com or I get on Amazon to see what the latest Bose is.
Because they're supposed to be the best,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they'll be advertising specific Bose products to me because I'm an informed Bose viewer or customer. But somebody who's not would be fed a different ad. That's incredible technology. Think about that for political purposes.
That's exactly what I've been thinking about over here.
Yeah.
You can target your political ads to... Wow.
Yeah. I mean, with this type of targeting, you'd be able to target to people who female, their gender, their sex preference, their
search histories.
Their search histories.
That's really remarkable.
$100 million to broadcast one football game.
And they'll make it up in spades, I would think, on the products and advertising. And, you know, Amazon's going to come out smelling awful good on this thing. And so is the NFL, by the way. $100 million for a Friday afternoon game after Thanksgiving.
Well,
in violation of the 1961, what did you call it?
No, it's not a violation. No. As long as they got the game started before 5 p.m. No. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. He's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. When we come back, we're going to check in with Jeff McCausland. We're going to talk about the latest in the Israeli-Palestine conflict. We'll probably get the latest on what's going on in Russia and Ukraine.
That's what I'm interested in is Ukraine, because we just haven't heard much about what's happening in Ukraine.
Later in this hour, we've got music from the Air Force Band, so you're going to want to stick around to Hancock and Kelly.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Happy Thanksgiving, St. Louis and surrounding metropolitan area. I'm Michael Kelly, and that's John Hancock. We've just gotten done celebrating one of the great American holidays. But, John, the world continues to roll on. Conflict in the Ukraine continues, and conflict in Israel continues to take place. Let's talk to an expert.
Let's do it. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, retired Colonel Jeff McCausland, joins us this morning. Are you at home near the battlefield at Gettysburg this morning, Jeff?
No, actually, I'm en route to Brooklyn, New York, to have a late Thanksgiving dinner with my son who lives up in New York.
Nice. Well, you enjoy that, and thanks so much for taking some time this morning. So much focus, and rightfully so, on Gaza. And I've not seen or heard much about what's happening in Ukraine. We know that the funding for Ukraine continues to be a political football in this country. Russia continues to try and advance. What is the state of play right now in Ukraine?
The state of play in Ukraine, characterized by their chief of staff of their army, was close to being a stalemate. He even said in an interview with The Economist magazine that he'd not expect a major breakthrough between now and the end of the calendar year. This time of year in Ukraine is also a very wet portion of the year, a lot of rain, early snows. Consequently, the ground will become very, very muddy, making it very difficult for heavy armored operations to continue. But I think as you mentioned there at the top, we have seen Russian efforts, particularly against a couple of locations, a village called Avdiivka and another called Bakhmut, and in some cases just using mass infantry assaults and as a consequence taking very heavy casualties. Neither of these particular towns, to my mind, are of great strategic importance. I think they take a lot greater political or symbolic importance, the Russians wanting some kind of a win. But as we come close to approaching the end of the year, and frankly, the onset of the second full year of this war, or completing the second year, I should say, the Russians now have taken somewhere in the neighborhood, according to British intel, of over 300,000 casualties, probably 180,000 killed in action, the balance being wounded. The Ukrainians probably half to two-thirds that many. So this has been an unbelievably bloody affair. But you're right as well. In many ways, the top story right now about Ukraine may be in Washington, and that is concern that the United States may not continue military assistance to Ukraine, making things on the battlefield tough, particularly for shortages of such things as 155 millimeter artillery, which is fundamental to the Ukrainian ongoing offensive operations.
So the NATO allies are still participating and supporting the Ukrainian effort. And I do think there's a bipartisan majority in Washington that will continue to support Ukraine funding. The question is going to be, the political question is whether they're going to have an opportunity to vote on it. Assuming they do, I think that funding continues. But NATO is still very much behind this, for the most part, right?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, there's a couple of countries, Hungary and Slovakia, have recently announced that they're no longer going to provide military assistance. Austria said they will provide assistance, but not military assistance, but their contributions were relatively small. In the last few days, we had a meeting in Kyiv where the Secretary of Defense Austin was there to announce an additional $100 million in U.S. military aid. That was part of an appropriation made by Congress quite a while ago. But at the same time, the German defense minister was present, and he announced that Germany would contribute about $1.5 to $2 billion in military aid to Ukraine beginning next year. So it does seem that the Europeans will continue to do so, whether or not they can make up the slack if the United States totally drops out is more problematical. But I also think you're right. If it was actually brought to the floor in the House by the new speaker, I think a bill to provide aid to Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan, which is the package the administration has offered, would pass there. And in the Senate, I think would probably pass about 80 to 20. It's an amazing divergence. The Republican Party in the Senate being very strongly in favor of Ukrainian support, less so in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, it's an interesting political time that we're all experiencing. That's no doubt about that. I find the inclusion of the Taiwan aid particularly interesting when you look at geopolitically what's happening. You've got Iran that's all in on supporting Hamas and Hezbollah and various other satellites throughout Syria and Yemen and Afghanistan. And you've got Russia, obviously, that's, you know, pursuing its objectives in Ukraine. China looking at Taiwan. There's just this convergence, it seems to me, between all of these interests that are aligned against the United States at a time. And I think the aid to Taiwan is particularly interesting here, and it's historically significant.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it comes in the aftermath of this very important meeting between President Biden and President Xi of China there on the periphery of the APEC conference in San Francisco, in which they tried to, if not improve relations between the two countries, at least find some kind of a floor or stabilize relations, which have been on the downside ever since the great balloon controversy of last February. But, you know, it's an interesting time in Taiwan because we're coming up on presidential elections in Taiwan in January. And there's one candidate who right now I think is leading the polls who seems to be pretty outspoken about pushing for Taiwan independence. If he were elected and would push that idea, that could raise the whole issue of Taiwan into a greater crisis and greater problems than we even have right now.
No question about that. And before we leave Ukraine, I wanted to ask about, I know there was some U.S. aircraft made available, planes made available, and there was training that needed to take place before those would be operational. Where does that stand right now with the Ukrainian Army?
This is the F-16s, and the training of Ukrainian pilots to operate the F-16 has begun at several locations in the last few months. I think we can expect them to be formally operational probably sometime early in the new year, maybe around the 1st of March. That'll be a significant improvement in the Ukrainian Air Force. But will not be a deal changer because the number of aircraft, which I think is only like 50 or 60 total, will not be that overwhelming. But that being said, you know, as we often look at this ongoing counteroffensive by the Ukrainians, and many people have been critical that it hasn't gone as rapidly as they would like or expect, it's interesting to me because I don't recall a successful offensive when the other side had air superiority, which the Russians certainly have enjoyed since this war began.
We are visiting with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. And Colonel, today is the start of the ceasefire as it relates to returning of some hostages and the conflict going on between Israel, Palestine, Hamas. Any word yet on whether or not this has been a successful ceasefire? And in the history of military, do ceasefires ever work?
Well, they work, but work, you know, with a question mark behind it. I mean, will there be accusations of violation of the ceasefire? And the answer is, of course there will. You got all these guys who are very heavily armed. Many of them are young on the Hamas side, probably not that well trained. Are they going to cook off a few rounds here or there? Sure. Does this also mean Hamas has total control over all its fighters? Some are part of Islamic Jihad and other groups. Oh, by the way, it seems to me we're not paying enough attention to the whether or not this ceasefire also means that we don't see fighting between Hezbollah in southern Lebanon and Israeli forces, which have been going on and seemingly intensifying over the last few days. Does Yemen respect this ceasefire? Because, oh, by the way, they've fired a couple of missiles at Israel since this conflict began and have interned a ship. We've got some seamen who are now hostages in Yemen. And do we see a ceasefire in Iraq and Syria, where we've seen Shiite militia groups supported by Iran ostensibly attacking U.S. bases as part of this larger conflict across the Middle East? So will the pause or ceasefire, whatever you want to call it, extend to there? But the recent reports I have is that the 13 Israeli hostages are being released. The last few minutes I've learned they've been transferred into Egypt. It's reported they are largely, if not exclusively, women and children. Unclear if any of those are included in American, because we know that there's one American child, it will be 4-year-olds today, who is being held hostage by Hamas, her parents having been killed when Hamas made their attack back on the 7th of October.
Yeah, do we have any idea how many of the hostages are still living? I guess we probably don't, right?
We don't. I mean, the numbers that are released, I've heard about 237 or so total, are all those held by Hamas. Some might be held by Islamic Jihad. There have been some suggestions some may be held actually by criminal groups in the Gaza Strip. As part of this agreement, supposedly Hamas is supposed to allow access to the hostages by the International Red Cross, the Red Crescent, which is the Middle Eastern version of the Red Cross. That will be a very interesting thing, to my mind, to see if we get a complete accountability of who Hamas says they're holding, what their condition is as we move ahead.
He is Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, kind enough to join us here on KMOX. Colonel, before we let you go, we know you're headed to Thanksgiving. What pie will it be for Colonel Jeff McCausland tonight?
Oh, it'll be pumpkin for sure, without a doubt, pumpkin pie. And let me give a big, I've got a lot of friends and relatives there in the St. Louis area, so I'd like to wish them all a very, very happy and safe Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
There it is, Colonel Jeff McCausland. Happy Thanksgiving,
great
he says,
stuff
to St. Louis. Appreciate you being with us, Jeff. And, hey, when we come back, we'll have the Air Force marching band. You're going to want to hear this after this on KMOX.
They're playing basketball.
It's men's Billikens basketball action Saturday as they take on Dartmouth. Pregame 6:45, tip at 7 on your home for Billikens basketball, King of OX.
And welcome back to KMOX, the Hancock and Kelly Show. We are joined in studio by Major Justin Lewis, who's the commander of the United States Air Force Band of Mid-America, right here at Scott Air Force Base in St. Louis. Major, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Yeah, and you are a part of the United States Air Force Band of Mid-America. What do you all do?
So my job is to wave the baton. But we have some amazing musicians who connect with the American people, who honor our veterans and inspire young people to serve in our Air Force. And we're real excited to make that connection all the time. It's a great opportunity for us to show what the Air Force is doing, what all the airmen are doing around the world.
Yeah, and the young men and women that are in this room today, were they recruited specifically to be in the band, or did they just show up at basic training and somebody found out they played an instrument?
There are a couple hundred jobs you can do in the Air Force. Anything that interests you, there's something that connects with it. And these guys, they're patriotic, you know, they want to serve their country, but they're also fantastic musicians. So, yeah, we put out auditions, and they'll come and actually audition for us like you'd see on, you know, the old American Idol or whatever. And when they're fantastic, we'll give them a form and they go off to basic training, and yeah, it's a great opportunity for them to serve in a unique way.
So obviously this time of year you guys are going to do concerts, and we're going to talk a little bit about your concerts because you've got a bunch of them across St. Louis.
Absolutely.
And people can access them, and more importantly, they're free. But What do these men and women do, and what do you as this traveling band do on a daily basis?
So, you know, military music has been a part of our heritage since the founding of our country, frankly. And whether it's booing up the troops, whether it's working with ambassadors overseas in order to sort of share American culture to make friends for our foreign policy objectives, or just right here at home, you know, honoring our veterans and performing at funerals for thousands and thousands of men and women who have died serving our country or who have done that in an honorable way over the years. It's a great opportunity for us to really get out there and use music to do so.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And of course, we've got a bunch of military cemeteries here. Yeah. You are the folks who would be playing taps and the other music at funerals, et cetera?
Correct. That's exactly right.
And then, of course, this time of year, you come around and you have your Christmas concert series. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to.
So for the past 70-plus years, the Air Force Band has been here in the St. Louis metro area. And we do, I wanted to say we're the official Christmas band or the holiday band of the local area. So because we do these holiday concerts, to say thank you for the community for all the great support that they provide to the airmen at Scott Air Force Base and beyond. But this year we're just all around. So 1st of December we're at the Kirkwood Performing Arts Center. 2nd of December we're at the Two Hill Performing Arts Center. 8-9 we're over at McKendree University at the Hettenhausen Performing Arts Center. And then that last week we've still got a bunch of tickets left over for Muscoota High School over in Illinois side. And we're really excited to make connections with folks at these concerts.
Yeah, and the first part of December, you have several concerts, some of them in the middle of the day and some of them in the evening.
That's right.
If people wanted to get tickets, and these are all free, where could they go?
AFBandTix, that's T-I-X, AFBandTix.com.
How long have you been in the Air Force?
Almost 12 years.
How long have you been heading up this musical group?
Oh, my goodness. I came here 3.5 years ago. It was during the pandemic, so we got a kind of a slow start at getting to know everybody. We were all locked in our houses and all that, but it's been a wonderful experience for me and my wife and 5 kids to live here in the metro area. We absolutely love it here. We've taken advantage of everything that there is to do here in the St. Louis area.
You know, we have a zoo and it's free.
Oh, I'll tell you what. It's the week all our family's coming to visit. Bunch of people, family coming over this week, and so we're really excited to take advantage of the zoo and everything else with the cousins, and just a really, really great area.
Okay, so how long is it a normal tour for someone who is in the Air Force? They join the band. The band.
Yeah.
What would be their typical tour? 2 years, 3 years, 10 years?
Yeah, so they sign up for 4 years. We have actually one of the highest retention rates in the entire Air Force because folks love making this connection. They love making the music and they love doing good things for their country through that music. So it's a great gig, and people can re-up up to 20 or even 30 years if they choose.
This is so awesome. Your play has been incredible. Let's listen now to the team play Ding Dong Merrily on High. Thank you. Wow, Justin, that was incredible. We've got, what, 8, 9 instruments here. How many instruments are typically in the band?
You know, if this studio were a little bigger, we would have brought all 60 musicians from the Air Force Band, but we just couldn't crowd them in today. So we brought you the brass quintet, but we do have, you know, oboes and flutes and folks that do lots of special instruments. On the holiday show, we got somebody playing ukulele, which is going to be kind of fun. So just a lot of talented people do a lot of really great things.
Wow, this is, it's just incredible. Now, how much of travel is there with this? And do you wind up going to other cities and playing with their symphony orchestras,
et cetera? We actually have members of this band right now who are traveling overseas, representing, working with the U.S. State Department to make friends for the United States. So we have folks right now at the Dubai Air Show. And so we're just all over the place trying to make friends for not just the United States, but its Air Force.
He is Justin Fields. He's the major who leads the United States Air Force Band of Mid-America from right here at Scott Air Force Base in St. Louis. Give us that website one more time for all these free concerts.
Yeah, get those free tickets, AFBandTIX, that's tix.com.
We have several of you with the Mid-America Air Force Band here in St. Louis today. Headquartered at Scott Air Force Base. Please take a moment to introduce yourself, where you're from, and what instrument you play.
Hello, I'm Airman First Class Jonah Kelly. I'm from Nebraska, and I'm a trumpet player.
I'm Master Sergeant Brenna Hyatt, the other trumpet player in our brass quintet. I'm originally from Pella, Iowa.
I'm Airman First Class Nick Mahalik. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm the trombone player.
I'm Technical Sergeant Laura Pojar. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I play percussion.
My name is Airman First Class Bruno Gutierrez. I'm a tuba player from Laredo, Texas.
My name is Staff Sergeant Abigail Merton. I'm originally from Johnsburg, Illinois, and I am the horn player and NCOIC of Airlifter Brass.
Wow. Generally, most of you are from the Midwest. We have one Texan. We won't hold it against you. how long have you typically been doing this? 2, 4 years?
I'm the big winner. I'm almost at 21.
Oh, my goodness. Really? You look like you're 12.
Thanks.
Yeah. 21 years?
Yep.
That's incredible.
I've been in just a little over 2 months.
And when you all signed up for the military, did you know specifically that you were going to go into playing music, or were you hoping to be Top Gun or something?
Right. So almost all of our members of the Band of Mid-America have some kind of music degree. So most of us went to college and have one, if not more, degrees in music. And the Air Force Band program has auditions just, you know, like any other major professional music organization. And everybody applies to a specific audition to become a part of the Air Force Band's program. So, yes, we all came into the audition knowing we wanted to, you know, be musicians in the Air Force. And then, you know, you have to go through the whole process, win the job, and then you go to basic training. And this is what we do full time.
That's awesome. Have any of you, obviously you're playing in this group, and I know you trumpet players probably get a little extra work playing taps, right?
We do.
At most of the funerals.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had to play for the President of the United States or any of their dignitaries?
I have. When I was stationed at Travis, I played for President Reagan's internment ceremony out at Simi Valley. And then sometimes, if a president passes and they need help with the band that supports that mission, they'll bring members from other bands to help support. So I was also part of the Bush internment down in Texas a few years ago.
Wow, that's special. And here you are now. St. Louis is your main base that you all are hanging out at over at, Scott Air Force Base?
Yes, sir.
So will Christmas be relaxed with your own families, or are you going to be running around the country still playing music?
I'll be going home to visit my family.
Down in Texas?
Yes, sir.
We have a pretty busy concert season leading up to Christmas, but then kind of the way it works with our Christmas leave, it's hard to obviously rehearse as a group if one or two members are gone. So we take our leave from our squadron in kind of a block leave. So after we have our busy Christmas performance season, most of us take about 2 weeks of leave.
Wow, incredible. Well, you've got time for one more song with us. Will you guys play We Wish You a Merry Christmas?
We'd love to.
Sure. Yeah.
Awesome. Here we go. We Wish You a Merry Christmas. Thank you.
KMOX Newsroom, national winner of the Edward R. Murrow Award for Best Newscast in America.
And welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. Hey, no worries. We're going to stick around till almost 11 o'clock visiting with our good friend Chris Ranji. He's running solo today. No Amy.
No, yeah, but Brad Young from the law firm of Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young is going to be right here in these very studios.
How about that? Well, listen, don't forget that you can still see Hancock and Kelly, the television show, on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on Fox 2 in St. Louis. We do that show with Andy Banker. I'm interested to see Andy. I've not seen him since the incident where the people were shooting the pellet gun at him, John. Did you see that?
It was horrible. And imagine, because you don't know it's a pellet gun. You see somebody sticking something out the window and you hear tat, 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 tat. I mean, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to have that. We'll cover that on our Sunday show as well. And then Monday evening, we'll come back here for Hancock and Kelly Late Night from 8 to 10 p.m. Monday evening. We do try to do a non-political show. Talk to you about the comings and goings of St. Louis and things that are burr under each of our saddles.
Yeah, and we'll have our sports insider with us on Monday night as we
John Hancock Jr. Will he still be in town or is he going to be headed back to
the
Windy City?
He's headed back tomorrow. So I take him to the airport. It's been great. He's been home all week. So it's been absolutely wonderful.
Yesterday, you sent me a video almost at the exact same time I was experiencing the same thing. And that was young Kennedy from my family. Was the star of the show yesterday, John. She's about 17, 18 months old, got her teeth.
Yeah.
She was kind of feeding her, feeling herself around the room. And of course, man, it's hard not to smile and watch those little people. And you sent me a video of young Tula. She was playing with old Papa, wasn't she?
Yeah, Papa and Tula were in the backyard playing ball, and she was throwing their balls into the fire pit, and I told her not to do that, and she would just laugh and put the balls in the fire pit.
Sounds like she and I have a lot in common.
Yeah, but how precious, and what a blessing, man, having that little granddaughter.
And it's still too early for her to fully grasp Christmas, but Christmas is going to be fun. With an almost two-year-old, and that, Santa Claus is coming.
Well, and I'm married to Mrs. Claus, so it's impossible not to enjoy Christmas, no matter your age. And we Georgianne stocked up on the Christmas books, and we're reading a bunch of Christmas books to young Tula, and it's going to be a magical year here, a magical month.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to all of you who've listened to us this morning. We're going to stick around with Chris Ranji. If you're out shopping, be careful. Enjoy your weekend. We've only got a little less than a month till Christmas, so get out there, do your shopping, get ready. It's Hancock and Kelly. We'll take you all the way till 11.
We will indeed. Thanks so much for listening. James O'Sullivan doing his usual great job on the board this morning. It's Chris Ranji and Brad Young next on KMOX.
Adios.